we've talked often about in the off season, you have to get your cap together. What does our financial situation look like going forward? And I would imagine you're trying to figure out what is each player going to cost you going forward. Marner's number has changed for sure. What does Nylander's number look like compared to what they may have written down last summer?
Well, my guess is last summer would have been somewhere between 5.25 and 6. And now it's $7 million, obviously quite a bit higher, just under 7. I mean, the landscape has changed, there's no question about it, because the part that was upsetting to me most about this kind of money is being paid to the 6th best player or 7th best player on the Toronto Maple Leafs. And you look at these other young guys that are coming up next year, Tkachuk and them, Laine, that group, they may not be the number one guy on their team, but the lowest they are is 3. They're not 7. And so to me, this just changes the numbers that the guys above that line that are not signed, like Jake Gardner, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, what they're going to get. The numbers have gone up. I have no idea. And I say this a lot. Kyle's a smart guy. I believe that. I know Kyle. Not really well, but I think he's very intelligent. And he says he's got a way to keep this together, but I cannot, for the life of me, with a calculator and 7 pencils, figure out how you're going to keep this group together.
Brian, we know the salary cap is apparently going up to $83 million. And I don't know why we're so hung up on comparables in the NHL. I know the NFL has a hard cap, and I bring up the example that Joe Flacco was the highest paid quarterback in the NFL 2 years ago, and he certainly wasn't the best player. Why can't Austin Matthews, with the cap going up, make more money than Connor McDavid?
Well, who says he's not gonna?
Well, there's that prevailing thought that he can't make more than $12.5 million that Connor McDavid makes.
Well, who told you that?
That's just the thoughts when you look at comparables around the NHL, that Connor McDavid's the best player in the NHL and Austin Matthews shouldn't be making more than Connor McDavid.
Well, I've never heard that, and I think it's just whoever told you that isn't thinking very clearly, because it's all based on the cap moving up and down. I think the natural thing would be, if you say they're comparable players, you'd say, okay, when Connor McDavid signed, his salary was X percent of the cap. And maybe you can argue Austin Matthews shouldn't make more than that percentage of the cap, but the cap's going up to 83. So the notion that I don't know what they expect to be paid, but I certainly have never heard that what you just said. I'm guessing they are thinking we're going to take the same percentage or more. The one thing Connor McDavid can't score goals like this kid can. Austin Matthews is magic with the puck. Like, he's got the hardest, most accurate shot. I don't know if I've seen anything like it in the last few years.
Before Tavares signed with the Leafs, he called Austin Matthews. And I wonder if the conversation included that, about how much money I'm going to be taking less. Is it possible that that is part of the conversation, that they can hope and cross their fingers that one of the reasons he came here is because he got a guarantee?
Yeah, I don't think he got a guarantee of anything. My guess is that they might have that conversation, but that I'm pretty sure Austin's agent doesn't feel bound by a telephone call between John Tavares and Austin Matthews. And, you know, the PA presses these guys hard to raise the bar, so I'm not anticipating that he's going to ask for less than Connor McDavid. I think that's far from clear.
Brian, you can obviously speak to this. Why is there that perception that it feels like it's taboo to offer an offer sheet? Because if I'm a rival GM, if I'm Marc Bergevin in Montreal, and I see my chief rival, the Maple Leafs, potentially get into cap trouble, why wouldn't I offer sheet Austin Matthews at $15 or $16 million based on the percentage of the cap going up? He's a guy who's probably worth 4 first-round picks because he's a generational talent. Why don't we see that in the NHL? Isn't that just smart business, if you're in Montreal, to put your rival in some cap hell, and in worst-case scenario is you end up with that player?
Well, what happens is the teams are very careful. The reason that they go in a certain order of signing players is they don't get into that problem where they can't match. And the reason offer sheets are not more common is not because of some handshake or wink agreement between the GMs, because the GMs would push each other off a cliff to win a playoff run. So it's not that. It's that you think the team's going to match, and 9 times out of 10 they're going to. And you say the Leafs are in potential cap trouble. They're not in potential cap trouble. They're in cap trouble.
Right.
And it's odd for two reasons. One, it's self-inflicted. It's because they signed John Tavares. And I support that. The notion, the Leafs should be applauded greatly for the notion that we're close, we're going for it. I love that. I mean, it's the same thing I did in Anaheim. I love it. You get close, you don't know when you're going to get close again. And it's not a short window with these guys. They've got 2, 3, 4 years with this group. So I love the fact they're going for it, but they created cap hell for themselves by signing John Tavares. And the notion they're going to keep them all together is just bizarre to me. But I predict that you will see an offer sheet this summer and maybe two.
There has to be. Obviously, it's not going to happen, but it seems unfair that if you were smart enough in how you drafted and you have so many players that are going to be good around the same age, you can't possibly keep that all together, even though you were smarter than the other guys. Shouldn't you be rewarded for that?
No. I mean, that's, you're in a hard cap system. But you're right. There's a failure of logic to it. Winnipeg's in the same boat.
Yeah.
They've drafted too well. And Toronto, the one difference here is the free agent signing of John Tavares is what created this mix. And the difference being that the Leafs have had no playoff success, and they've got massive cap issues. It's supposed to go the other way around. You're supposed to have success and then have massive cap issues.
But isn't this something that's going to be happening more often in the National Hockey League now? And it's going to get worse after next year, as you point out, that the young players are now starting to make a higher proportion of salaries. Used to be, and your Anaheim team that won, you had a couple of players that were outperforming their young contracts. Now the guys have to do that much earlier.
Yeah, you're right. There's a change going on, and I'm not sure why or if the players will stand for it. In other words, there's 650-700 members in the Players Association. You got these 20 to 30 kids who are commanding high salaries much earlier. And you've got veteran guys who have waited their turn, and now it's their turn to get the big payday, and it ain't happening. This hasn't happened yet, but it will this summer. So I wouldn't be surprised if the union internally looks at this and says, we got to fix something. But in the meantime, they're all happy that these guys are getting paid. But the logic of what you said about if you do this too well, you don't get rewarded, you get punished. Yes, there's something to that, but you don't get punished. You lose the players. You just trade them for other assets. And Chicago did it masterfully for about 5 years. They won a cup. They had cap problems. They peddle out Kruger and get a draft pick. They peddle a scale, get a draft pick, then draft another player who can play. So you can work with this system. It's the only one that makes sense, you know, with a hard cap.
Brian, is there a chance, because there's so many stars that are hitting restricted free agency this summer, is there a chance that some of these guys start taking shorter-term deals to cash in? If you're a Patrick Laine and you see the salary cap going up $3.5 million, who's to say that won't go up by $8 million in 5 years from now? Is there a chance, and is that worst-case scenario for these teams, if a guy like Laine or Matthews signs a 4-year deal instead of an 8-year deal and then hits unrestricted free agency?
Right, and I think in this agreement, the Leafs got 1 year of unrestricted on Nylander, if I'm not mistaken. And typically, when teams go long term, they want more than 1 year, and they've refused to march players right to free agency. So if a guy owes you 4 years, a 4-year deal is out of the question. You'll do 3 or you'll do 5, but that may be the breaking point in this new group of players. It was with Johnny Gaudreau. He signed a 7-year deal, not an 8-year deal. He wanted a shorter deal. So he signed 1 year shorter than the team wanted to sign him. So you're right. That's the next step would be, okay, if I can get to unrestricted free agency on this deal, I will take less because then hopefully I'll get the big payday the second time. So maybe I only get $8 million a year this year, which is a pretty good payday.
Right.
And I can get 12 on the next one. So that'll be the next pressure point, no question.
You know that voice. It's our hockey insider, Brian Burke. Seattle gets their team. We know the timeline now as far as when they're coming to the National Hockey League. What's the timeline and, like, who and what as far as the general manager is concerned as we look at that date?
Well, they right away, so Philly opened up last week. And it's very flattering. Right away, I got calls, are you going to Philly? And no, I'm not. I made my career shift, and I'm happy with it. Having worked in Vancouver all those years, I immediately got calls yesterday, are you going to Vancouver? No, I'm not. They've got plenty of time here to do this. Their plan sounds like they would put a GM in place even this summer, so that the guy could be in place, or 2 years before, 24 months before, so the guy could be in place 24 months before they begin business. It will not be Dave Tippett, according to his own statement. He wants to be like a president of hockey operations or some kind of senior advisory role like Murray Craven was with or is with Vegas. So they're going to hire a GM and a coach and a scouting staff, but they can't do that now anyway. You need permission to talk to all these people. So they'll probably begin their search not this summer, but the following summer, I think.
Brian, how much did GMs learn their lesson to not make those side deals like they did with George McPhee and the Golden Knights? How much is this going to be tougher to Seattle to build a team opposed to what Vegas did with their expansion draft?
You're dead on. They're not going to get half the help that Vegas. Vegas played it perfectly. And they extorted great deals from a couple teams. This time around, they're going to tell Seattle, here's our list. Pick whomever you'd like. They're not going to make any deals to keep guys, maybe one or two, you know, maybe one exceptional case, but that piece of ground has been picked over. It's not going to happen again.
So you're paying what, $650 million for an expansion franchise, and we see that Quebec has kindly left out of the equation, and you got that Ottawa franchise. I mean, there's no way that the National Hockey League can now sell a team for less than an expansion fee. And how does a team in Quebec ever get there? Because they'll never be worth $650 million in Quebec.
Well, that's I'm not sure. You're right. Your initial statement is right. Right now, if you're a team owner, you're rubbing your hands together saying that if an expansion team is worth $650, mine's worth at least that. And I just think that's fallacious and false thinking. I don't think it's made a Carolina franchise worth $650 million. I don't think it's made a Florida franchise worth $650 million. Not one bit. And I don't think it's made a franchise in Quebec City worth $650 million. So that's a problem with when you get these, you know, what you call a tentpole price maybe. You'd say, okay, now we got $650 for an expansion team. Now everyone says our team's worth $650. Well, they're not. So the problem with Quebec, and people don't like to hear this in Canada, but the problem with Quebec is it would be the smallest market in the NHL by a considerable margin. So Winnipeg's around 700. I don't have these figures exactly. All these people have to tweet and correct me. I'm pretty sure Winnipeg's around. That's what I said yesterday. I went on Tim and Sid and said, stop tweeting me. I don't care. I don't follow anyone. I don't see them. I think it's 775,000 people roughly in Winnipeg, 660 in Quebec City. And I worry about Winnipeg long-term if they've done such a great job. I worry over the long run if they have four or five non-playoff years, if that won't hurt them. And there's no corporate base to fill the suites. There's no big companies in Quebec City. There's a handful, but not the 60 or 70 or 80 you need to buy the suite. So I have doubts about that market anyhow. And I think most NHL owners do. I've been in the room when they've discussed it, and this is the discussion. Is there a big enough critical mass to have it to host a team? And people say, oh, it's Quebec City, everyone loves hockey. Well, they lost their team once. So we'll see.
Brian, we know that the Coyotes ownership wasn't thrilled that they're the team that has to move to the Central Division. And if I kind of look at the conspiracy theory for all of this, doesn't that kind of make sense to me that eventually, if they don't get a new arena done and there's still questions with the ownership, that Houston just makes a ton of sense, that they move that team from Arizona to Houston, and then all of a sudden you have that natural rival with Dallas as well? Did this just feel like a perfect fit here eventually and maybe puts the pressure on Arizona to get things done sooner than later?
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything subtle about it. I think it was a logical change for now to make the geography doesn't work for at least one, two, or three teams in every sport, right? The division you're put in, you're on the outside of the division, your travel's tough. You look at the NBA, there's a couple teams. You look at the NFL. So this is not it's not unusual for one team to say, well, we're kind of out of place. But the second part of the conspiracy theory, I think, is the long play here, which is if they don't get their house together, and I mean literally a new arena in Phoenix, that team's likely to move. I don't think NBC wants to lose that market. There's 5.5 million people in Phoenix, but Houston's a huge market too. So I think the thought would be if they don't get a building, that's a logical destination for their team. There's no question in my mind that's in the back of people's heads.